Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 20th of February, and I am recording at 10:25 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time here in London. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, I'm just going to have a talk about, the last month, because it's been interesting, impressive, really quite bullish for a number of stock markets, and we've seen some excellent gains. We have also seen, well, I'll talk about one that development, which is so important in here today. Looks like we've got a deal with Greece and the EU. You've probably already heard and read about that. But when that was announced here today, really stock markets just caught on fire. For example, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down about 100 points at the time, and it closed up over 150 points on the day, so a turnaround of over 250 points just on that news itself. And other stock markets, the European stock markets surged against that background, and futures contracts for a number of other markets, Japan being one, which were still trading, although obviously it was well beyond their actual official market hours. We're all extremely strong, and we can assume that there's a lot of relief that this big grouping has finally crossed this important hurdle. And so, as an uncertainty factor, a headwind for stock markets, however you want to describe it, that's probably behind us now for at least the next few months. I don't want to get carried away, because it still remains, you know, how on earth does Europe actually generate all the GDP growth? Hopefully they'll be addressing those problems. I've been hoping that for, I could grow old hoping for good economic programs in Europe. What we also saw there was today was a huge amount of short covering. And that has certainly increased gains for those of us who are long. It has also created a little bit more of an overbought situation and left the market technically susceptible to some consolidation once the momentum buying is completed. But overall, I mean, I suspect that Europe's going to have a very good few months. You know, next week we'll see a little bit of profit taking, I assume. But, you know, the QE begins. It starts in March, and that will be a big stimulus factor. We've seen it. We know exactly what it does for stock markets. And it's hardly surprising, because that's what it's intended to do. So I think Europe will be very much in form. Japan will remain very much in form. This is a bull market that we've been tracing all along and discussing the various possibilities. The very minimum possibility for Japan was that this would be a cyclical bull market. But that the chances were very good that it could be quite a good medium term to longer term bull market, and there was even a possibility that it could be a secular bull market. Well, the lengthy medium term bull market was reaffirmed in here this week, as Japan broke up out of its range. Japan's indices, major indices, broke up out of their ranges. And, of course, the secular bull market, well, that remains to be seen. But Japan also is the other a really important market, which is getting lots and lots of QE. So I think those are the really inform areas here, not just for the next few months, but possibly longer. And I mentioned that other markets will benefit from Greece going from a headwind to, well, a neutral factor here, or possibly even being a positive influence overall, and that's reflected in Wall Street's improvement. Okay, now a lot of people have been worried. This has been an unloved bull market. There have been a lot of hedge funds which have well, they found that it's been hard to make money with their short positions here overall for the most part. And there have been people forecasting repeatedly crashes. And that goes right back to, well, you can remember Nouriel Roubini, right back from 19 beg your pardon, from 2009 onwards, talking about that possibility. And it's happened again here more recently with a number of different commentators, some of them well known, talking about a serious bear market. Now, my feeling first is that what actually causes a bear market? Some sort of major economic scandal in the works. That's what we had in 2007 and 2008, with, you remember, all the packaging, derivatives packaging of all those liars' loans, as the excellent book on the subject described it. And other factors, you can get an inverted yield curve. We certainly don't have that right now, but we did have that in 2006 and 2007. It's a big lead indicator. We've seen bull markets ended by tightening monetary policy aggressively. That's certainly not going on here right now. In terms of big factors that worry me, there's a lot of leverage, and I've shown that from time to time, and I've also shown it in my Markets Now comments, but here on this site as well. And I think what we have to say, if you have a lot of leverage in the market, you're lucky to be able to get out of that situation, or we're lucky as investors if people are able to get out of that situation without triggering a very sharp reaction and occasionally a crash. I think it has to be built into our thinking. It's something that does happen periodically with stock markets. You may not be old enough to remember 1987, but that had nothing to do with economic factors. 1987 was 5 years into the last secular bull market, but people got carried away, and they also they'd seen the introduction of the futures contracts, and they felt that, right, that meant that they could hedge their long positions. Therefore, they could hold on longer, take bigger speculative bets, on the basis that they could jump out quickly with the futures contracts. And well, you know what happened. Everybody tried to do the same thing at the same time, and so you had a massive crash. That's a risk. I think it'd be less likely to be a crash because those are not so frequent, but you're never going to get through many decades without seeing something like that happen from time to time. I don't think it's an immediate risk, and I but once we see, for instance, once we see Wall Street break its upward trends. And really what Wall Street did today was just reaffirm them once again with new highs by the S&P, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Russell 2000, the two NASDAQ indices, that's the 100 and the NASDAQ Composite Index, all reaffirming their overall upward trends. And they look good on a weekly chart. Have a look if you haven't already seen it. So we don't have the conditions here for that crash, but is it out there somewhere over the next 2 or 3 years? And my answer is, I don't know, but it could be. And we couldn't fall off our chairs in total surprise if we see that leverage actually increase. I don't know a whole lot about the breakdown of the leverage. I don't know if many other people know much more about it than I do. I don't know how much of it would be short positions, how much of it would be long positions. I don't know the nature of it overall. And of course, I'm talking about Wall Street's leverage, but there'll be leverage in other markets as well. But Wall Street's the big one, actually, to be focusing on in terms of that leverage. And it's where we get the most data actually released. Okay, but that's not going to deter me from riding this bull market, which has reaffirmed itself again in here this month for a good many markets. Well, in addition to Japan and Europe, which I think are the informed markets, well, they are the informed markets here for right now. They've had a great February, and February isn't even over yet. What an exciting month! And I think that will last for at least a few more months. But what else? And I continue to like India a whole lot here. And there's been that big kerfuffle about Narendra Modi's suits and some of the other gifties that he was being given. You know, a little bit of indiscretion there, but he turned it around very, very quickly. And has auctioned them all off, or he's allowing them to all be auctioned off to help with the finance, the project to clean up the Ganges. I think it'll take a lot more than Narendra Modi's suit to pay for that. But well, and he's a sensible guy. And I think India is again, it's going to be a very attractive market here over the next few years, for at least as long as Narendra Modi is in charge. Got a great central banker there, and Rajaram Rajan, or however it's pronounced. Okay, China. Also, so many bears, so many China bears, and so many people who actually fear China. I think, and China's been closed this week for their annual holidays at this time of the year. But I like it. I've got a big long position there, and I think. Well, here we have the second largest economy in the world. I think it's well managed right now. It's scary. I don't like command economies, although they can be very efficient. But this is a capitalist command economy. Usually they wind up being, they wind up being very different, don't they? They're either communist command economies. Russia is a good example of that. China, back in the Mao days, certainly was. But when you get a capitalist command economy, it certainly has better prospects overall. Well, that's my view, at any rate, and I'm happy to hold on to my positions there in China as long as they are performing, especially as they're such good value. India, a little bit more of an act of faith on Narendra Modi's abilities, because the valuations are higher. But I don't think it's hard to have that confidence in Narendra Modi. And again, Europe, attractive values, attractive valuations, rather. I don't have a whole lot of confidence in the economic management of the region yet. They're maybe getting slightly better. So in terms of Europe and liking Europe, I would say I continue to favor the autonomies, those big multinational corporations, which benefit from global GDP growth. Incidentally, on risks, the other risk, big known risk, is Putin. I've written and talked about that enough, so I don't have to say a whole lot in here. But Putin, we know, is weaker, but that can also make him lash out a little bit more. Hopefully, he gets removed from power by Russians. And you can bet that some of them are wishing the same. Whether it actually happens or not, we'll have to see. But if at the very some of the very worst scenarios that people can manage, and I'm hoping they're very much an outside chance. But on some of the very worst scenarios that have been mentioned in terms of Putin and what he might do with that big nuclear arsenal. Well, that would be something that, unlike a stock market crash due to leverage, which will not have a big economic impact in all likelihood, anything, any really reckless actions by Putin could have a massive economic impact. It's an obvious point. But there's a heck of a lot more good news going on than bad news here overall, and it's corporations that are the big beneficiaries of that. And on to technology, and its various different influences. A lot of people are so worried about deflation. Now, as you know, there are positive deflations and there are negative deflations. And if we see falling sales and earnings and profits, well, that's a destructive negative deflation. But if you have a factor, as we do in technology, which is making companies vastly more efficient than they have ever been before, so that they can produce more products much more cheaply and make more money by selling so many more of them on a worldwide basis, that's a very beneficial, positive deflation. And most of the deflation that the world is actually experiencing is positive deflation, in my opinion. I'll leave it there. Now, what else to say here? Let's look at the government bonds here. You've had that U.S. 10-year, which, remember, at the beginning of the month, that was down at 1.6 something, and now it's up at 2.11, I believe, here today. And that's a sharp move to the upside. I think that's behind the weakness in the U.S. utilities index that we've seen. It's a more interest rate sensitive sensitive index. And it looks like it's consolidating in this 2% region. Now, if it pushes higher again, and I've been saying this week that it's already equaled the excellent rally that, the sharp rally that we saw in October, but that was confined by the overall downward trend, which has been going on for 3.5 decades. Now, if we get this again moving sharply higher from here, and it's only a matter of time before that actually happens, then that will be clear evidence here that the global bond bull market is well and truly over. That should hardly be surprising. I mean, some of us, including myself, have called it early in here on several occasions. And again, I've always said in this, and I tip my hat again to those people who've held those bonds all those years and done so well on a total return basis. They've had a bad month in here. And if they see anything close to another month that's similarly bad, you get up, in other words, get up into that 240, 250 area on that U.S. 10-year, and I think that you will have certainly some not totally well. I would say you'll have more technical evidence that the bear market in global bonds has actually started. These transitions are usually fairly slow in terms of going from what has been a bull market, falling yields, into a bear market, rising yields. It can take several years of ranging and basing and so on. I've talked about that before, and that's certainly what we've been seeing, in my opinion. But you've got to believe that negative deflation is going to have a grip on the global economy for years and years and years, to believe, I feel, that those long-dated government bonds are a good investment. They're not. I think the risk is really very high, and it's impossible to know exactly where we are on the fuse. But in terms of that fuse steadily burning, leading finally to an explosion as that bear market clearly has kicked into action. We've had a little warning in here this month so far, and I'd be very careful there, and I'd much rather obviously have the equity positions overall. Now, I don't expect fallout. I would not expect, you get those, let's say, 10 U.S. 10 years at some stage this year. And I don't know if it'll be sooner or later, but I wouldn't be surprised to see it this year. It gets up into that 240 to higher levels. How will that affect the stock market? And I think it's likely to have a very it's likely to have a benign effect overall, particularly if it yields move up slowly, and or get plenty of ranging between the occasional sharp 30-40 point moves, because what will happen is that you'll get less new money flowing into the bond markets, and you will have some of the bond people switching into equities. Not all of them, obviously, but it's a huge market. It just takes some of them to do that, and that would help stock markets overall. It's not until we get those short-term rates up and we get close to a negative or inverted, I should say, yield curve, that we should be more concerned about the impact on stock markets. So we're still in a stock market sweet spot. I don't I think that bond market sweet spot is ending, and I'd be careful to emphasize that point again. Well, what about currencies in here? Because that's certainly an interesting area. Headwind for the U.S. stock market from the strong dollar. Of course, that is a siren call to a number of people who say, oh, get into the U.S. stock market because the dollar is strong. I think they're missing the point that corporations are complaining about here right now. If you'd done that 5-6 months ago, well, congratulations. That would have been very good, but don't come in, because you would have been coming in before you had the huge surge in the dollar. I wouldn't want to be coming in at this stage, and I think that, again, I've described it as a headwind before. if the dollar ranges up here, then it will be a little less of a powerful headwind, as is the case here right now. And the market can still rise against that background, but if the dollar were to take off again, I don't think it will myself, not in the short term at any rate. But if I'm wrong on that, if it did take off again to the upside in the short term, I think that would be a more serious, well, it would definitely be a more serious problem for some of those U.S. multinational companies. Yes, there's some bets benefits in terms of the costs of things that they're actually buying, but it'll compromise their sales efforts, and that's what I'm I've been mainly speaking about. Okay, other currencies, the purely resources markets still going to have weak currencies in here. That's certainly understandable. What about the yen's weakness, and does do Japanese positions need to be hedged? Well, you can take some risks in doing that. I'm less concerned about it, especially as a number of Japanese are now questioning whether they need the yen to fall that much further. I don't think they do, personally, here. The euro, well, the Eurozone and Mario Draghi certainly wanted a weaker euro. I'd be surprised if we went into a strong euro, but maybe it did enough down, and maybe it's going to range above that 1.10. It's currently 1.1381. Maybe it'll range above that 1.10 level for the at least the short term, and possibly into the medium term, but that depends more on what the dollar actually does, in my opinion. If I were running the Fed, and thank God I'm not, I'd try to get that US dollar down. Not all the way back down to the lows, but I try to cap this rally because it was too fast, basically. Other currencies, China. I wouldn't be surprised if China weakened the renminbi a little bit further. But again, they want it to be an important reserve currency, so that may keep it reasonably firm for longer. We had the same thing with the euro. European Union wanted it to be an important reserve currency, and it's not an unimportant, it's probably the second most important reserve currency. Well, China will eventually take over that position, but they'll have to have a reasonably steady renminbi before that actually happens. So I'm not looking for huge swings there. It's basically just the resources, and we've already seen a huge amount of weakness there. Maybe we get a little more stability. It's in terms of currency alignments. I wouldn't be too surprised if that were the case. What about some of these commodity markets in here? There's been such a big bear trend, and it surprised me with the extent to which it moved. All these, so many of these commodities moved down. Now, there are two factors in here. One, take the soft agricultural commodities. Their trends are influenced much more by crop cycle developments, largely weather and pests. If they're largely free of pests and have good weather, then prices are going to be depressed. If they have bad weather and lots of pests, then the agricultural commodities are going to soar. That's not good for the global economy overall, although some producers will benefit temporarily. We have had good weather and good crop cycles generally this year. So Well, we only just begun this year. Let's say we had that very much in 2014, and that's carrying on into 2015 so far, and that's good for global GDP growth. It's good for poor regions, especially. The other factor in there will depend more on the global economic cycle, and that's the industrial commodities and also the precious metals in here. And that's been sufficiently soft, particularly in terms of China's once ravenous demand for these metals, which everybody, the growth in China's demand, and every metal producer extrapolated that on into perpetuity. So they're now in a position of being able to produce vastly more metals than China actually wants, because it was in the process of killing itself off here with the pollution of all that metal bashing that was taking place in China. And also they thought, well, we don't want to be a third world country here. We want to be a first world country, and we need to be have a consumer economy. And not be trying to mash metal, bash metals for the rest of the globe. And that was, I think, an intelligent and practical realization. And a lot of people said they're not going to be able to pull this off, but I think they will. I think they are on that. But at any rate, I'm talking about metals and. Technology has been a huge factor here. This is another disinflationary factor here, the ability to produce these metals much, much more cheaply. And that's keeping the prices relatively low. And the big boys are not cutting back that much. Their shares have done considerably better here this month for the most part, which is an encouraging sign. I'm also remembering from all the stock market cycles that I've seen since the early 1960s that when you get bull markets are aging, a highly cyclical group such as those industrial resources stocks tend to have lagged throughout most of the bull market, and then they get a big run right at the end, partly because they're so cheap and partly because the global economy that the bull market improvement that the bull market was discounting is seen to be real. And so they get a last dramatic catch-up move. I've mentioned this before. Well, we haven't seen anything like that here so far. You can interpret that as good news that the bull market is not all that long in the tooth, and they seldom die of old age in any event. And I am encouraged that the big miners here, I think, can hold their yields. I'm talking about the BHPs and the Rio Tintos. We will see. It's not a hot area. It's certainly not a hot performing area, but one's rewarded for one's patience with the with the good yields. Okay, what about these precious metals? Ugh, well, God. The plaything for some of these hedge funds and other big trading houses. Choppy action, a lot of ranging action, just meltdowns and melt-ups. I'm glad I'm not trading them anymore, and I was probably fairly stupid to be doing it to begin with, because it's, if you buy after you've seen a huge sharp sell-off, and then you can, that's the only time to buy them, and then you get a decent technical rally. Well, if you haven't taken the profit on that decent technical rally, you've been wiped out on the or lost all the profit on the next big sell-off. And that's the way they've traded here. And so Better late than never. I moved away and I'm long stock market futures, and it feels much more comfortable. I like seeing the green rather than the red here. How to describe it? They're not exactly gaining that much favor with investors because stock markets are doing so well. Bond investors have no interest to go running into precious metals. When people become more worried about Putin or whether the euro is going to collapse, unfortunately that's survived for another round following the Greek situation. Then people want to have some gold and silver. But overall, there's no siren call coming from these precious metals, and I think that will remain the case for a while. Are they support building here? Well, you know, maybe 51% yes, 49% no. I think they'll just continue to do what they are doing, and for a bit longer. If the big trading house bears are ever eventually right, and that would surprise me, but if they do succeed in eventually driving gold down to $1,000, $800, as people were forecasting, again, I don't think that's going to happen. But if it did happen, then I would have to open some seriously long positions, and probably buy the fiscal metals in that case. But I don't own any right now, and I don't need to, and I have no. I'm going to try to keep my hands off them for a while. Someone will remind me if I. Break that wish, vow, whatever. Okay, what else to mention? Last but not least, crude oil. Well, good chance that we've seen the lows or very close to it, but good chance that we see those lows retested and possibly even extended a little bit more at some point in here. Really, this is a huge change, a huge global change. The OPEC thing is in terms of their big influence. Well, that's been diminishing for a while, and I think it's out of their hands here and now. We can get volatility from time to time in line with global events. Yes, you'll get a close down of a lot of fracking activities in the U.S. and a few other places, Canada, where you're also seeing the fracking. But the moment the oil prices start to move back up again, they'll turn on the taps again. And people have mostly talked and written about the USA in terms of that big fracking supply. Well, there are a whole lot of other countries out there who could do the same thing, and they might actually do so if they see that. I think some of them inevitably would do so, including China, if we were to see oil move back up into that sort of $80-$90 dollar range, and I don't think it could get much above that. So that's good, because you have, unless you're an oil fracker here, or owning a lot of speculative resources companies and oil shares, but it's good for the global economy, I should say. And yes, it's disruptive in regions and in countries which are primarily resources, not least of all oil suppliers. But again, I repeat the point: it's better for the global economy than high oil prices. Incidentally, the killer back in 2008. Well, yeah, we had a big financial scandal there. But we had Brent crude up to $147, I believe, $147 or $144, and it spiked up there, and those spikes to the upside have always ended in disaster. Well, I don't think we're going to see any more of those. And the renewables are coming on very, very impressively. Solar is by far the best of them, by far the most flexible, and solar is a technology. Wind is not a technology. Solar is, and that's the costs will keep coming down. And on that note, well, I hope to see, I know I will see some of you at the markets now. And we've got a few more seats if any of you are masochistic enough to walk outside and hear the spiels. The really interesting one, though, the one that everybody should hear is David Brown's presentation. This is a bit special, and I'm just so glad we've been able to put it on. And have a wonderful weekend. All the very best to all of you.